And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Machuda.
And welcome, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. It's great to be with you today to talk about how to explain, defend, share the faith with confidence, clarity, and charity. And yes, you have entered into Virgin Most Powerful Apologetics Dojo. It's time to let's get ready to do apologetics, shall we? And got a great show in store for you today. Master Apologist Ken Hensley comes into the dojo. And we're continuing his series on analyzing atheism from kind of like its own perspective. And throughout the series, Ken has been sharing with us how, the God view, the theistic worldview, it makes sense of our experience. It makes sense of the things around us. Everything kind of coheres into a coherent system. But what if God doesn't exist? And Ken's been presenting step-by-step this case that if God does not exist, certain things naturally follow, and it doesn't fit with our experience. And today's episode, I think it's going to be really interesting because Ken's going to come on, and we're going to talk about atheism and this idea of conscience. Are you? When I'm talking to you, am I talking to a who, or am I talking to a what? And, from the God perspective, the answer to those are easy. Yes, I'm talking to a person. I'm talking to a who. But if God doesn't exist, what exactly am I talking to? Am I talking to a biological machine that has really no self, no consciousness? Well, anyway, Ken Hensley's going to come on. We're going to talk about that. It's a fascinating idea. And so we're going to exploit that. Also, we're going to do our critical thinking skills, as always, folks. And this is fun. I always enjoy this part of the program. Today's Finding the Fallacy is the appeal to the stick. The appeal to the stick. And I'll explain a little bit more when we get to that. And we're also going to meet the early church father. And last episode, that was the August 21st episode for those listening via podcast. Just started introducing Origen of Alexandria, and man, there's just so much to say about Origen that we're making it into a twofer, a two-parter. And so today's part two of Origen, so we're going to learn a lot about that particular early church father. And before I forget, I want to thank everybody for coming to our live YouTube event where we're talking apologetics in the 21st century with two great guys, extremely knowledgeable gentlemen. Both of them have been on the show. In fact, I want to have them back on the show. It's John DeRosa from ClassicalTheism.com and also our good friend Pat Flynn from the Pat Flynn Show. We were on there talking apologetics, and we had a little bit of a technical difficulty, so I think we lost a good part of our audience because we had to change URLs in midstream. But nevertheless, a good time has been had by all. And by the way, for those who signed up in advance to that special event, you're going to get a recording of it. So just in case you got left behind somehow with all the technical glitches, have no fear because you'll be able to watch it. Maybe not live, but you can watch it via recording. And it's great to partner with other ministries. And we'll have to do more of that in the future. It's time for our shout-outs to say hi to all you watching live stream via Facebook, YouTube. Hello. Thanks for the emoji explosion on Facebook. I appreciate it. And good. And thank you, by the way, for listening on radio and also podcast. Really appreciate it. And by the way, if maybe there is a show that you missed or you can't catch the entire show today, maybe you only caught the first part of Origen, you want to find out the rest, go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. That is the website where you can get all the great programs produced by Virgin Most Powerful, and all the episodes of Hands-On Apologetics is up there and ready to download. You can also do that, I think, via the phone app as well. So without further ado, gang, let's jump into the Finding the Fallacy. And like I said, the Finding the Fallacy today is the appeal to the stick, or the argument to the cudgel. What exactly is it? Well, this fallacy is committed when one appeals to force or the threat of force to bring about acceptance of a conclusion. In other words, believe it or else, right? Accept it or else. This is one of those fallacies I don't think I've ever encountered in the realm of apologetics. although you do encounter it quite a bit as a kid growing up. But nevertheless, it's good to know, you know, just round out. That's actually called the appeal to the stick or the appeal to the cudgel. And you'll know when it occurs, because if you feel threatened, then like you, something bad will happen to you if you don't accept an argument. You know that that is a fallacious argument. Now, you might point that out to somebody and get beat up, but nevertheless, that's our Finding the Fallacy for today. All right, let's jump into Origin, shall we? Origin of Alexandria. This is part two of our first part, and we went over some biological details about him, born in Alexandria. Talked about episode, his father is a martyr. And he was under the direction of his successor, who was Clement of Alexandria, the School of Alexandria, which was then reaching great prominence. And the School of Alexandria, folks, emphasizes understanding scripture allegorically. Okay, so they didn't spend a lot of time on the literal sense of scripture, but they were looking for the spiritual sense of scripture. And roughly around 212 AD, he sojourned in Rome, where he made the acquaintance with the Hippolytus. And then he left again for Alexandria roughly around the year 215, when the emperor was currently looting the city and persecuting its teachers. So he instead went to Caesarea in Palestine, and there he preached to a congregation on scripture, although he was a layman, at the request of the bishop of Caesarea and also the bishop of Jerusalem. Now, this causes a big stir because, of course, laymen aren't ordained, and they aren't supposed to be preaching. So, you know, you think there's liturgical abuse now, you know, apparently there was liturgical abuse back then as well. And actually some very strong objections were raised against Origen being permitted to preach. And they, the bishop, for example, of Alexandria demanded that he returns back home because of it. So 15 years later, again, he passes through Caesarea on his way to Greece in order to, and while he was doing that, in order to evade, you know, these strong objections to a layman preaching, Alexander and Theocritus, I believe that's how it's pronounced, ordained him into the priesthood. So now that's a problem. It solves one problem. He's a layman. Now he's a priest. He can preach. However, there's also another infraction that happens because this was a breach of the canon law, which meant that a man be ordained only by the bishop of his diocese of residence. So, you know, more problems for Origen. There were two synods in Alexandria because of this infraction. 230-231, he was deposed, degraded, and excommunicated. And then he moved to Caesarea in Palestine, where he founded a school patterned after in Alexandria. And during the Diocletian persecution, he was tortured and imprisoned, most likely in Caesarea, and as a result, died in Tyre at the age of 69. Now, Origen, incredibly brilliant scripture scholar. In fact, he is the founding, he's usually looked to as the father who founded textual criticism. He was the first one in earnest to start comparing the different versions of scripture, different translations, different languages, comparing one to another to ascertain, you know, what is missing in one particular version and what is found only in another. So he's known for his work called Hexapula, which is basically a bunch of columns with, you know, the Septuagint, the Hebrew, and all these different translations. So you could just read line by line and compare what the different text, how they read certain things. He also was very speculative in his theology. In fact, he came up with a couple of very interesting ideas, such as the preexistence of the soul. And probably the one thing that he's most known for is this idea that eventually the damned will be raised to heaven. So in a sense, he kind of denies the eternality of the of hell. Now, that was his own particular opinions, but they were just opinions. The problem is later on in the 300s, the 400s, and the 500s, his works began to circulate, and people began to earnestly propound these beliefs as part of the faith. And this gives rise to a heresy known as Origenism. Now, Origenism, you know, Origen had these ideas, but he wasn't an Origenist. He was just Origen who speculated. It was later on that this heresy of Origenism sprung up and actually caused lots of difficulties in, like I said, the 4th, 5th, and 6th centuries. So that's another thing to keep in mind, too. And as we do our Meet the Early Church Fathers segments, I'll mention Origenism every now and then. That's, you know, basically this unusual teaching that he came up with that people started espousing. So, you know, Origen is not a saint, but he is an early church father. And like I said, he, by and large, he has some really great insights in the scripture. But, you know, you also have to be aware of these really super speculative things that are really beyond the pale of the faith. All right, coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to chat with Master Apologist Ken Hensley about atheism and consciousness. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back.
This is Terry Barber reminding you there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Let's talk a little bit about atheism, atheistic worldview, and how things don't necessarily square with how we experience it and understand them. For example, is there a self? is there such thing as consciousness? What is consciousness? Well, to help us navigate through these waters, we have Ken Hensley join us. Ken is a nationally known Catholic teacher and author who, since converting to the Catholic Church in 1997, has worked extensively in the field of apologetics. He's done numerous interviews on Catholic radio, television, Catholic conferences around the country. He also specializes in wide-ranging subjects from natural Christian and Catholic apologetics, scripture, dogmatic, systematic theology, and the art of evidentialist and presuppositional apologetics. He works online as the online resource and pastoral care coordinator for Coming Home Network. And by the way, folks, you can get a lot of his great stuff at his website, which is none other than www.kennethhensley.com. And Ken, welcome back to Hands on Apologetics.
Good to be with you again, Gary. Good to see you.
Yeah.
And let me throw something out just quickly from what you just said. If people want to purchase physical copies of many talks that I've given in various apologetic series, they need to go to St. Joseph Communications for that, okay? Awesome. To buy CDs and whatnot. If they come to my website, Kenneth, I have MP3 downloads.
Okay. Yeah. Boy, where that name?
Which one? St. Joseph Communications.
Communications. Yeah. Which, you know, those listening, obviously, Barber's brain. That's also, you know, that's part of the program. So yeah, absolutely. Check it out. Yeah,
I still remember when I first, not to get too deeply into this, but the way my conversion began was that I found out that Scott Hahn had become a Catholic, and Scott was an acquaintance of mine who had become a friend back in the time we were in seminary. And so I was just in shock, and I listened to his conversion story, and I contacted him, and we began to talk. And anyway, behind my back, he called Terry Barber on the phone, and he said something to the effect of, "I've got a Baptist pastor on the hook, you know." And Terry graciously sent me a gigantic box full of CDs. At the time, cassette tapes. Basically, every cassette tape series that Scott had done to that point, Terry sent them to me free of charge. And this big box, you know, stamped all over the outside with St. Joseph Communications, showed up at my Baptist church. And I remember when I saw the box outside the door, I freaked out. And I grabbed the box and I just hustled it into my office and bolted the door and started thinking, man, how am I going to get rid of this box before someone sees it? But anyway, so Terry was sort of in my life from the beginning, because the second I converted, which was about 4 years later, actually, it took me a while to finally go through all the material to learn and to make the decision. But as soon as I resigned from the ministry, Scott was in touch with me, and Scott was in touch with Terry, and Terry came out and had lunch with me, and we sat in a little restaurant, and he threw a contract on the table.
Oh, wow.
You know, to sign me on to do speaking for
– Yeah.
Speaking and produce materials. So Terry goes back to the beginning.
Yeah, Terry, he has his fingers on all sorts of, you know, awesome things behind the scenes, you know, spreading the faith, sharing the faith. That's an awesome story.
I know. In fact, he's got his fingers everywhere. When I finally read the early church fathers, I was surprised that Terry didn't show up there, you know, doing something.
I'll have to, Terry, if you're listening to the show, you got to come up with some sort of brown paper, nondescript mailing thing for non-Catholics. Just FYI. That's funny. Yeah. Every time I turn around, you know, I hear stories about what Terry's been doing, and it's just amazing. So, Ken, you know, we've had you on the show a number of times. I love the approach that you're doing, because basically you're showing that the theistic worldview, you know, the belief that God exists, how it squares with reality. But if you take God out of the equation, it doesn't fit like a hand in glove. In fact, a lot of things just simply don't really make sense.
Yes, if you take atheism seriously, and what I'm referring to is the philosophical naturalism, the idea that literally and truly nothing exists at all but particles interacting with one another. A totally physicalist view of the universe. Materialist view is another word that can be used. And by that, we're not referring to Madonna, you know, material girl, but materialist meaning nothing exists but material. Or philosophical naturalism is another term for it. If you take that worldview seriously, what you have is a completely reductionist worldview, meaning everything we see, everything that exists has to be reducible to matter, has to be reduced to material. And when you take that and try to apply it to our lives or to what we really experience, I mean, and I don't mean just on the periphery, but the most basic fundamental things about our lives, you find yourself just hitting a brick wall everywhere. And that's the approach that I'm taking in evangelism is to help my atheist friend or my agnostic friend to see that if he, she wants to take God truly out of the equation and say there are no spirits, there is no soul, there is no God, there is nothing, there's only material, then they're going to have a hard time explaining their life. And they're going to have a very hard time explaining many, many very fundamental things that they believe and that they live based upon every single day of their life. And we've talked about some of those in preceding sessions.
Yeah, like morality, all sorts of. It's funny how reality starts to unravel a little bit as far as a coherent rational system, because you just don't have ways that you can stick that pin in so that it stays.
As Dostoevsky said in his book, The Brothers Karamazov, he had one of the characters famously say, if God does not exist, everything is permissible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, if there's no God and this really is, nature is red in tooth and claw, as Tennyson said, this is just a war of the survival of the fittest, then to try and come up with an objective standard of morality is simply impossible. Morality just boils down to whatever I don't like, and you can say it's relative from culture to culture or person to person, but that's what it boils down to. Right and wrong end up meaning words that we use to describe what we favor and what we don't favor. And so morality collapses in an atheist worldview. That is objective morality. Human rights collapses in an atheist worldview, which is an interesting one because many people who don't believe in God at all believe in human rights and fight for human rights, and yet there's no basis for human rights. The preamble to the Constitution said that we have these inalienable rights that have come from – we've been endowed with them from our Creator. Well, if there's no Creator, there's no endowment, there's no rights. You can make up rights. I could give Gary Machuda rights if I want, or I can just take them away and take Gary's life away. I mean, I'm not planning on it. And I'm in California, and you're in Michigan, right?
Yeah, unless you order a hit or something. Then. But I trust you, though. I know I'm safe.
I don't think I know any hitmen in Michigan.
Yeah. But it would be essentially the same thing as Skype. Right now we're communicating through Skype. You gave me the right to be on your computer. You could turn off Skype and revoke that right. It's purely arbitrary.
Yeah. So when it comes to human rights, when it comes to morality, when it comes to the value, the unique value of the human person, when it comes to meaning, there being objective meaning in life, all of these things collapse. There is no meaning. If philosophical materialism is true, then this entire universe is one gigantic physical accident. And since you and I are just simply a small part of this massive physical accident, you and I are physical accidents as well. And we've come from nowhere and we're going nowhere. And when it's lights out, it truly is lights out for all eternity. And so we're going from one subject to another, and today we're going to touch on a subject that goes even deeper, and that is the issue of human consciousness.
Yes. Yeah. Very good. In fact, to kind of put an end to that, and that's not something we're accusing people of believing. This is something that's readily admitted by, lots of intellectual atheists, imprinting on radio and YouTube.
Yeah.
Or media, that type of stuff. Yeah, consciousness. Let's talk a little bit about that. First, why don't we define exactly what do you mean by consciousness?
Well, I don't want to use the word conscious in my definition, but I'm starting to. It's a sense that I have of being me. It's the sense that I have that's completely inescapable of being someone, of seeing things, of hearing things, of looking about, of remembering things. I can remember, you know, I'm 65 years old. I can remember things all the way back to very, very early. So memories, intentions, what do I intend to do? What do I plan to do? It's all of these things together that would amount to the sense that I have of being someone, of being a self. Now, you know, I wasn't going to read this, but I think I really want to, and I know that we have a couple of minutes, but a few years ago, my son recommended to me that I watch this TV show called True Detective. Mm-hmm. And he said it's pretty nasty, Dad, you know, but it's really well written. It's really good. So I watched it. It's about these two homicide detectives, starring Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey. And this was the funniest thing, Gary. They very, very early on in the very first episode, these guys jump in a car together because they're getting to know each other. And they had and this discussion ensues that was like it was the most philosophically interesting and radical discussion I've ever heard on any movie or any TV show. Although I think Tarantino likes to throw in some really weird discussions in some of his movies, but I actually wrote down a transcript of it, and I think it introduces this subject so well. So let me read it, okay?
Okay.
They're riding along in the car. And suddenly, the one guy played by Woody Harrelson, who's named Marty, asks Matthew McConaughey, whose name is Rusty or Rust. Marty asks him, "So what do you believe?" Rusty: "Well, I consider myself a realist, but in philosophical terms, I'm what you would call a pessimist. I think human consciousness was a tragic misstep in evolution. We became too self-aware." Should have said we became self-aware, period. But we became too self-aware. Nature created an aspect of nature separate from itself. We are creatures that should not exist by natural law. Marty: "Huh, that sounds god-awful, Rust." Rusty: "We are things that labor under the illusion of having a self, this accretion of sensory experience and feeling, programmed with total assurance that we are each somebody, when in fact, everybody's nobody." Marty: "I wouldn't go around spouting that if I were you. People don't think that way around you." Oh, man, right in the middle. I know we got to disappear. We'll come back.
It's a good cliffhanger. We're talking with Ken Hensley about the problem of consciousness when thinking about atheism. Listen to Hands on Apologetics. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. This is going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to or are called to as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murray. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh, eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come. You want to bring your friends. You want to bring your daughters, your nieces. That's really an affordable day. So go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and you can register for this conference or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We're chatting with Ken Hensley about the problem of consciousness. And Ken, you know, right before the break, you were reading this basically a script where they're talking about the very same thing we're talking about, the problem of consciousness. And the character Rust says that we are things that labor under illusion of having a self, this accretion of sensory experience and feeling programmed with total assurance that we are each somebody when in fact everybody is nobody. And Marty replies, basically, I don't think I would say that out loud around here. People don't think that way. I don't think that way. So what's Rust's solution?
Well, Rust has no solution. In fact, what he says is, there's just a tiny bit more. What he says is, I think the honorable thing for the species to do is to deny our programming, stop reproducing, walk hand in hand into extinction. One last midnight, brothers and sisters opting out of a raw deal. So Marty says, so what's the point of getting out of bed in the morning, Rust? Rust says, I tell myself that I bear witness to the meaninglessness of everything. But the real answer is that it's obviously my programming, and I lack the constitution for suicide. Well, I listened to this conversation, and I thought to myself, wow, I have never heard a more depressing and although philosophically interesting conversation in a television show. And the thing that I think is most depressing about it, Gary, is that if what materialists like Richard Dawkins, you know, who wrote The God Delusion, and other atheists, you know, philosophical naturalists, if what they say about this universe is true, then Rust is right. We are things that labor under an illusion of having a self, of being somebody when we're not. And as you said before I began to read this, this is not something that I'm saying, that a Catholic apologist is saying. This is not something that a bunch of Christians are jumping up and down and saying. This is something that atheist philosophers readily admit. They readily admit the fact that if nothing exists but material substances evolving through time, particles, then the sense you have of self, of being Gary, including your memories, your ambitions, your intentions, your desires, your loves, all of that is really reducible to electrochemical processes taking place in a lump of meat inside your skull. It's a physical, these things are all physical, and you don't really exist. And I want to prove what I'm saying by quoting Daniel Dennett, is one of the most famous philosophers of mind in the world really right now, an atheist philosopher who's written a number of books. And what he says is that human consciousness from a purely materialist point of view is, it amounts to a bag of tricks, quote unquote, that the brain plays on us. He says that human consciousness is a fiction. He says it's an illusion. He says what really is happening is that electrochemical processes are taking place in a brain. Synapses are firing in a brain, and this brain is making it seem, quote unquote, making it seem as though there is a self that is somehow separate from these physical processes, somehow, you know, separate from these electrochemical processes, but is really not. He insists, in fact, that our brains make it seem as though we are seeing the color yellow, for instance. Our brains make it seem as though you are listening to music, the music of Bach, or the music of Madonna again. Your brains are making it, our brains are making it seem as though we believe in God, seem as though we intend to go to the store this afternoon or whatever, make it seem as though we remember that time many years ago, when in reality, nothing is going on, but synapses are firing in a pile of mush, neurons. And finally, he says, we have souls, but they're not what we think they are. He says, we do have souls if you believe that the soul is material. He says, our souls are trillions of little cellular robots, little biochemical machines, each of them doing precisely what they must do every second in accordance with strict chemical and physical laws. Our souls are made of matter. That's what he says.
Yeah, but so we're not whos, we're whats. And the only reason we think that we're a who is because our brain is fooled. I can't even say fool ourselves, because technically ourselves don't exist. I mean, other than just chemical processes that I don't know, it's some sort of animals with illusion, probably even less than that.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's hard to even think about this.
Yeah.
And it's hard to even state it, which to me is another argument for the truth of God, because the reason it's so hard for you to state it and for me to state it is because it is so out of sync with what we know to be true.
Right.
I mean, I know I'm somebody. You know, I know it, and I don't mean by that somebody great. I just mean somebody. You know, I know that. But there was a critic who read what Dennett has said about this, and he came up with something very clever. He said to Dennett, he said, you know, your view of human consciousness is sort of like the story of the emperor's new clothes. Now, you remember that story, right? Where the emperor comes out and he's naked, and yet the claim is that he's wearing these fantastic new clothes that you just can't see, you know? And and because this is what everyone's being told, the crowd watching the king walk down the road or ride down the road in his chariot or whatever he was on, completely naked, they are led to believe that he's wearing the most beautiful clothes, the most fantastic clothing that has ever been designed. And so they're all praising his clothing, and they're cheering, and they're saying, this clothing is just wonderful. And then it's this one child in the crowd that points and says, he's not wearing anything. He's naked. Okay, that's the story of the emperor's new clothes. But this critic said, this is very clever. He said, what you're saying, Dennett, is sort of like the story of the emperor's new clothes, but in the reverse. What you're saying, instead of the emperor having no clothes, you're saying the clothes has no emperor. You know, that we're you know, like Gary Machuda is walking down the street with all the appearances of being someone. You know, he's got this personality. You know, he's got this personality. He tells these jokes that his friends love and laugh at. He's got these ideas. He has a radio show and he talks about apologetics. I mean, he's got a family. He has memories. He has all the appearances of being someone, but he's not. You know,
right.
So it's the clothes, you know, the appearance of humanity, but there's no real self, because all there really are these neurons firing, these electric and chemical processes taking place. It's a horrible image, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, even when I was trying to repeat the words that you said, for example, he says that it's a trick, but you don't just have a trick. You try to trick someone or something, you know, or an illusion. It has
to
be an illusion.
And a person does the tricking.
Yeah, exactly. And even illusion, you have to be aware to know that what I'm seeing is an illusion. So it's almost you really do trip over language, because it's gobbledygook. It doesn't make any sense.
It's sort of like you can't even state it without contradicting yourself, because any words you use sort of imply the existence of a person, of a self, you know?
Yeah.
Like another molecular biologist, a very, very famous atheist that was that had his hand in discovering the human genome, Francis Crick is his name. This is what he wrote in a book called The Astonishing Hypothesis. Quote, you, so he has to say you again, you, your joys and your sorrows, your memories, your ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules, unquote. And You know, again, if you really let these words sink in, you know, if you think about them, you, I mean, your ambitions, your sorrows, your joys, your loves, you know, I read this and I had to think, I had to wonder, how does he look at his family? How does he look at people he loves? I mean, is it really possible that Francis Crick looked at his children, his wife, his brothers and sisters, his parents, his grandchildren, that he looked at them and he really believes that they are nothing more than the behavior of this vast assembly of nerve cells and so forth? I have 8 grandchildren now, Gary, and my wife and I and my daughter, our family, we talk all the time, and parents always talk about this, about how each one of these kids is so unique. You know, like right out of the chute, they come out having a personality, having desires, having dreams that are totally unique. And I find it impossible to do this total reductionist thing and to say, well, you know, the only reason they appear unique is because they have different nerve cells firing in different directions, you know. But there really is no person there. There really is no self there at all. And, you know, I don't believe for a moment that Francis Crick, he may have believed this on paper and he wrote, you know, a book about it. But I'm sure that all that just went out the window when the grandkids came into the room. You know, he doesn't really believe it because again, he's made in the image of God. And the truth is the truth. And whether he rejects it or not, he has to live with the truth. And so I'm sure he treated his grandkids as though they were persons, as though they were people.
That was actually one of the things with Jennifer Fulweiler, who was a materialist atheist, and she was holding her firstborn in her arms, and she was trying to convince herself that really what she's holding on to is this complex network of evolved, you know, biological system, and she couldn't do it. You know, that was the first step of her conversion out. It was just a square peg in round hole.
That's a wonderful thing. I've heard that before too. And it's a wonderful example. And you know, and I think that's true of all the subjects we've talked about. I mean, you can try to convince yourself that right and wrong don't exist. And yet when you see injustice occurring right before your eyes, your whole being just says, this is unjust. This is objectively unjust. It's not relative. It's not a matter of my opinion versus yours. And the same thing with human value, the same thing with human rights. You know, time to go.
Yeah, there's the music again. Yeah, we're chatting with Ken Hensley about the problem of consciousness and atheism. Stay tuned, folks. More to come on the other side of the break. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle and he says to me, hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Jesse's show and it's great. And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on fire Catholic and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This is Terry Barber reminding you there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. We are chatting with Ken Hensley about the problem of consciousness and atheism. And, boy, Ken, this is such a core issue because you can see how it just splinters into all sorts of other areas that I'm sure we're going to be talking about in future programs. Like, if there's no self, then, are we predetermined to, is there such thing as human will? Can we communicate? Can we argue? Can we persuade people? It's all of reality just kind of unravels once you come to that core conviction.
You know, this is something that popped into my mind a long time ago regarding this is that reductionist worldviews have these problems. That is that once you try to simplify in your mind, you're trying to simplify the universe by saying, you know what, it's all this. Everything reduces to this. Well, then you have to explain everything in terms of this. And what I thought of is that actually, when you think of it, on the one hand, you have materialism, and everything has to be reduced to material. On the other hand, you have some of the Eastern philosophies that claim that everything reduces to spirit. You know, it's the opposite. So the Eastern guru will say, Gary, everything is Brahman. Everything is spirit, or everything is God, little g, or everything is gods. There may appear to be physical things, but that's an illusion, right? The whole world is an illusion. And what you need to do through meditation and whatnot is you need to break away from the illusion of that there is a material existence and become one with spirit, which is all that really exists. And so it's reductionist in exactly the opposite direction. And if anybody says to the Eastern mystic, yeah, but look, I'm sitting at a desk. I'm pounding on this wooden desk right now, and I can hear the sound of it. I appear to be physical. The floor looks physical to me. This whole world looks physical to me. The guru will say, ah, but that is all illusion, you see, Gary. You haven't proceeded far enough in your understanding of the nature of reality. This is an illusion. Well, materialism does exactly the same thing. The hardcore materialists, when Gary Machuda comes along and says, but you know what? It really seems as though there are right and wrong exist. It seems as though that things have value. It seems as though there's meaning in life. It seems as though human rights exist. And it seems as though I exist. I mean, I really do have memories. I have a life. You know, there's this continuity from the time that I was born till now. I'm a person. And then the materialist has to say, in essence, ah, Gary, you just haven't quite perceived reality. You're living in illusion. All of these things are illusion. And that's what they do. Now, I didn't include this in this lesson, but there are a certain branch of materialists that are called eliminative materialists.
Okay.
Eliminative. And what they do is that they just proceed to eliminate all this illusion. And there are a couple of quite famous ones, Paul Churchland and his wife, Pamela Churchland, who are philosophers down in San Diego, at least they used to be. And what they say is, we need to just eliminate all of this, what they call, I think it's called folk psychology. It's just the way people talk and the way that they think. It's all this illusion that we buy into. Sort of like the Eastern mystic would say that we all just buy into this illusion that we're walking on a solid planet and all that, but it's all illusion. They call it folk psychology. This whole idea that we have that we are persons, that we have a self, that we have memories, that we have intentions, that we have all of that. It's just a way of talking, but they don't exist. And we need to strip all that away. We need to eliminate all that and get down to what really does exist. And the only thing that really does exist are these chemical reactions taking place in a physical brain. So anyway, I just wanted to throw them in too, you know, to say this is where materialists are at on this whole thing. And, you know, one complaint that I get is a complaint that I get on all these subjects is, well, can you haven't proven anything? I mean, all you're doing is describing what I have to accept if I want to be a consistent materialist. And I say, well, yeah, that's right. So far, at least. Okay, but wait for the next couple of lessons. So far, at least, you might say that I haven't proved anything. But that's why I refer to this as evangelism, or how I evangelize. Because in a sense, I'm not trotting forth, at least at this point again, I'm not trotting forth a formal proof of God's existence. But what I am doing is I'm taking the materialist worldview, and I'm trying to lead it. I'm trying to lead my atheist friend to the logical conclusions, knowing that because this friend of mine, whatever he says about the nature of the world, really has been created by God and is the image and likeness of God, and knows that right and wrong exist, knows that the self exists, that this will create this will intensify a tension that I believe already exists in his life, and bring him to see that the worldview he's trying to hold just doesn't work. It's not fitting, and will make him unhappy with his worldview. Sort of like what you said about Jennifer Fulweiler. You know, she kind of experienced the presuppositional argument in a way right there, because she held her baby, and she realized that if she were to be a really consistent atheist, she would have to say this is just a bag of protoplasm, you know, I'm holding in my arms. And yet, because she's made in the image of God and human value really does exist, love, all these things, she couldn't do it. And well, that's exactly the tension that I'm talking about. And that's exactly the tension that I seek in doing evangelism.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Because you almost have to prod them so that they experience something that transcends something material. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They operate within a little box, a materialist box. And it isn't until you say, hold on a second, you know, this doesn't make sense. There's got to be more than something in this box. And in fact, you know, there is something, you know, and sometimes, you know, they're able to step out of their own worldview and say, you know what? Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
I think the box analogy.
The box.
the box analogy is really good, and I. What you're saying there is really beautiful. Another analogy that I came up with and that I've used is this swimming pool analogy. There was this game that all of us play when we're kids, where you get into a swimming pool and you take a blow up ball and you kind of stuff it underneath yourself and you float on the ball. Right, you're sitting on this ball, and you're kind of like suspended in the water. And then you try to pretend like nothing's holding you up. You know, you say to your buddies, hey, look at me. I'm just here. I am in the water. And then your friends will stick their foot out and they try to kick the ball out from underneath you. And, you know, and once they've done that, they kick the ball out, the ball pops up and you immediately sink like a stone into the water. This to me illustrates this method of evangelism, too, because what I think is that the atheist is like this guy floating in the water, and he's got all this stuff from God holding him up. You know, he's got belief in right and wrong that allows him to live. He's got a belief in the dignity of human people, belief in human rights, belief in the meaning of life, belief that he's somebody. He's got all these things that are holding him up, all these truths, as it were, that are sort of supporting him. And yet he wants to pretend that they don't exist, that he's just there and, you know, whatever. And so I view this form of evangelism as kind of like sticking my toe out very quietly and trying to kick the ball out from under him. I'm trying to kick the ball out so the ball pops up and he sinks in the water. And he has this aha experience of realizing that there are all these things that don't fit in the box, you know, to mix the metaphor again. That, you know what? Yeah, there are all these things that are not explainable. They don't fit in the box. And there are all these things that I've been allowing to hold me up in the world. And if I take them away, if I take away a belief in right and wrong, if I take away a belief in the self, then I just sink into this pit of realizing that I am nothing. And in fact, I can't even say I am nothing because there's no I.
Right.
It's just there is nothing, you know, or nothing exists. Yeah. That's the tension, though, that there's a tension that I believe every single person who doesn't come to faith in Christ, ultimately come to faith in God and believe in God, this tension that the atheist lives in, that he wants to say that nothing exists but material substances, but he cannot account for his life on the basis of material substances.
Sure. Well, we only have about a minute left, but let me ask you a question. Why do you think atheists don't see this natural progression of thought? You know, I know many of them do, but I think the run-of-the-mill atheist that you'd run into at work or, you know, in a bar or something, you know, they mm-hmm. haven't thought through to the conclusion. Why not?
Well, you said we had a minute, and okay, so let me see. I think there are a multitude of reasons, but my mind goes immediately to Romans chapter 1, where Paul says that the existence and nature of God can be clearly seen through the things that have been made, and that would include this. But he says, and therefore he says, men are without excuse who suppress the truth. So, you know, this all comes back to the fact that we are a fallen human race, and people have a motivation to not believe in God and to not submit to God. And so that's a part of it, is a real motivation. And then a lot of other factors in their own lives, maybe broken family past, maybe things that have happened to them. Maybe they read a book that seemed convincing to them, and so they bought into it. There could be a lot of reasons for why. But it is interesting that it's not that hard to lead someone to see that they at least have some major things to explain if they want to be atheists, if they really want to stick with it.
Yeah, very good. Well, I'm going to call this the Ricky Ricardo approach. You have splaining to do. Yeah. Well, anyway, hey, boy, this is the fastest hour on Catholic Talk Radio, I swear. Great summary, by the way, Ken. And where could people go to get your talks and other information?
Well, again, if they want to buy physical CDs, which I know many people like to have, go to stjosephcommunications.com or stjoe.com, whatever it is, St. Joseph Communications. Yeah. If they're okay with digital downloads, they can go straight to my website, kennethhensley.com, and purchase those very inexpensively to download and listen to. The things I write appear through the Coming Home Network, mainly on their blog page and on various pages of the website, and in the Coming Home Network newsletter that comes out monthly. Thanks,
beautiful.
Gary.
Well, thank you so much, Ken, for coming on the show.
See you next month.
All right. Yeah, this is Ken Hensley, everybody. And check out those resources. And, you know, let's get Terry Barber busy filling orders. Order some of Ken's stuff from St. Joseph. Well, coming up tomorrow, we have one of my heroes in the pro-life movement. Dr. Janet Smith is coming on board. And we're going to talk about contraception and explaining why artificial contraception is wrong to people in the world. And also, coming up next, High Impact Catholic Talk Radio coming at you with the Terry and Jesse Show. The show that started it all, folks. So I guess it's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center, turn off the dojo lights. It's been a pleasure to be with you. And thank you so much for coming and listening to the program. I appreciate it. And God willing, we'll talk again tomorrow. Everybody have a great day. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.